you know, I'm barely awake an hour, but already subconsciously or consciously, I've checked the weather. So people don't actually realize that they're, a lot of the time, that they're using open data.
Welcome to Smart in the City, the Babble podcast. I am your host, Tamlin Shimizu, and really at Babble, we aim to connect the players in the smart city industry with high quality information and ideas through our platform and services. This podcast is really an extension of this goal and mission to drive the change for a better urban life. Before we get started, I wanted to inform all you lovely listeners about a great opportunity. Babble has extended the deadline for the Innovation Market Watch for 2023. So top smart city companies are invited to apply before the 30th of September, and it's completely free. So just follow the link in the show notes. So today in our mini series with Smart Dublin, we are diving into the world of open data and data ecosystems, looking at a unique case study called DubLinked and the activities that surround it, as well as everything open data and the co-coordinated effort made by the Dublin local authorities to publish open data. So the best people I have to speak about this topic are with me today, luckily, and that is the Smart Dublin Projects Coordinator, Luke Benz, who focuses on developing and promoting Smart Dublin's open data portal, aka DubLinked, and regional data strategy. Hi, Luke. How's it going today?
Hello, Tamlin. Very good, thank you, and thanks for having us along.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming onto the podcast. And also with us today is Gay Bourne, who works for South Dublin County Council as a systems analyst and team leader, and is also currently responsible for a diverse portfolio, including GIS, libraries management system, and various internal digital signage projects. He is also an open data liaison officer, responsible for all things open data related in South Dublin County Council, including ultimately open data publication. Hi, Gay. How nice to have you here.
Good morning, Tamlin. Good to be here.
Yeah, thank you both so much. I'm really excited to dive into open data. It's really such a trending hot topic today, and I know Dublin's doing a lot of interesting things with it. So just to get us a little bit warmed up to start talking about it, I wonder if you both can mention one thing that most people get wrong about open data.
Hi, Tamlin. Luke? Hi there.
Sure, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Luke.
I'll take this. Yeah, absolutely. So we work internally with service owners and service providers in the local authorities. It might be housing, it might be planning, it might be environment. And we get this question quite a lot. What exactly is open data? So absolutely, we tell them that it's has to be in an open format, so it needs to be used and reused. So if you put it up as a PDF or some kind of format like this, it's closed and people can't deal with it. So while they have provided the data, they have provided the information to the public, and they have put it out there, if you like, it's not actually in a reusable format. So that's something that we get is, but how do you actually check, make it so that people can use and reuse and play around with it? It's just, you need to get the format right.
Yeah, great answer. Gay, do you have something to add in your experience?
It'd be possibly similar insofar as it wouldn't be what people get wrong about open data. It might be just a lack of their current appreciation of what it might be. So that's possibly what it is. It might be just a gap. I think the concepts themselves are fairly easy to understand once people are informed about them. I would just say it's a gap in the knowledge, and it's up to us to promote that.
Yeah, good. Then we'll dive right into a bit more about what you all are working on. So basically, the four Dublin local authorities operate independently and then strive to publish open data in a co-coordinated way. And that's under your guidance, right, Luke?
Absolutely. So the four Dublin local authorities, we do work together. We have an ongoing working group, which comprises the open data liaison officers of each of the four Dublin local authorities. And then myself representing Smart Dublin. We also have a representative from Derrylinks, which is a company which provides technical and management services for the open data portal, both for us at regional level and also at national level. So yeah, we do try to work in a coordinated way to identify, publish, and update data sets across the four Dublin local authorities, because although we provide similar services and we do similar things, we all have very different systems and data management and all different kind of processes and procedures that we have in place. So it can be a challenge getting it all, I suppose, delivered in a harmonized way.
Yeah, good. And so you work on Dublinks, right, as you call it. Can you talk a bit more about the inspiration and thought process behind it? And can you explain a bit of how it works, actually?
Yeah. So Dublinked predates my time with local authorities. It dates back actually 10 years, in fact, 11 years to 2011.
Oh, wow.
So it predates Smart Dublin, in fact, which it only dates back to 2015, 2016. So what it was I suppose, a coming together of local authorities and also Maynooth University and also IBM at that stage, which wanted to branch into smart cities. And open data was seen as a big, I suppose, impetus and emphasis of the projects at the time, because I suppose most smart city projects have a huge data component, whether it's around air quality or smart mobility or smart energy management in buildings. These are all, I suppose, data-based initiatives, which are all about, I suppose, collecting the evidence, collecting the data, and then making smart decisions based on it. So that was the thinking at the beginning. Then around 2016, it was revamped and relaunched. And instead of having the IBM, technology behind it, it went with a more open source kind of approach through the CCAN platform, which is pretty standard fare now for open data platforms around the world. Is most of them are using the CCAN.
Yeah, cool. And Gay, where do you come into play here? How long have you been working in this arena?
Yeah, I'm just thinking back. I think probably in the arena itself, in terms of data, too many years, I would think, that I'd be care to admit. But in terms of open data, looking back, I think I was appointed as Open Data Liaison Officer for South Dublin around 2017. I think we would have been involved with publishing open data maybe for a couple of years before that now as well. So it's been a good few years, I suppose.
Yeah. And it's as Luke just explained, it's such a backbone of everything we do with a smart city, so to say. So also with that, why do you think it's such a hot topic today? And is there a time when data shouldn't be open? Maybe Gabe, maybe you want to answer this one.
Yeah, sure. I suppose to answer the second part of your question first, we'd be pretty conscious, or more than pretty conscious, of our obligations in terms of data protection.
Yeah.
So, and that data protection legislation came in before open data legislation as such in our country. So it's something we are very conscious of as public servants in terms of how careful we need to be with personal data. And I'd say it might come up again later in our chat. So, yeah, for sure, we'd be conscious of making sure that any data that we publish is open, is suitable for open publication as such, and doesn't contain any personal or commercially sensitive information.
Yeah.
In terms of it being a hot topic, I suppose, as we mentioned earlier, it's something we need to make even a hotter topic in terms of our staff here and the general public. Still, we've a good bit to do on that. So, if we look at our researchers and our web developers obviously very, very keen on open data and accessing data that they can use in that regard. But I still think we have a body of work to do with our own internal organizations and with the general public in terms of publicizing that message.
So hot, but hot, not hot enough, I suppose, huh?
Yeah, but getting there. I'm getting there. And okay. I think maybe if I was to put my general public hat on, maybe people don't realize day to day that they're using open data. You know, for instance, I'm barely awake an hour, but already subconsciously or consciously, I've checked the weather and I did travel by car today, but if I was traveling on public transport, I would certainly have checked times. So people don't actually realize that they're a lot of the time that they're using open data.
Yeah.
One of the great hidden secrets, maybe we should be telling them that it's open data.
Telling the world. Well, now we're helping to do that, you know, with this podcast and other means. But maybe also, Luke, you have how maybe this leads into another question about engaging with citizens. So what ways is your work doing that? And what's kind of the biggest challenge as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, absolutely, Tamlin. So when we publish data as open data, there's no logins that people do to access it. We have no way really of knowing who is using it and for what purposes. So we are in a bit of an information vacuum there. Obviously, we hear about things anecdotally and people reach out to us to ask for data sets to be perhaps updated or if there's any issues or anything like that. But we do also run various engagement activities, both internally and externally. Things like events, webinars. At the moment, what we're running is a challenge. So it's a competition that everybody can enter to explain what they are doing or what they propose to do with open data through the course of the challenge. And then at the end of it, they'll have a showcase and everybody will be able to have a chance to show the tools they build, the applications they've built, the app analysis they've done, and so forth. We ran one of these challenges last year, the Active Travel Challenge. And by all accounts, it was very successful and we got some really good insights into how open data is being used from it.
Cool. And can you, I guess, speak a bit more about the challenge that's going on this year as well? What's the focus?
Yeah. So it's a very broad focus this year. So we've called it the Active Travel. That was last year. We've called it the Climate Action Challenge. So each local authority in the Dublin region has a climate action plan. And each of those plans has a number of themes in it. So transport that I just mentioned is one of them. Another one is energy and buildings. Another one is nature and biodiversity and so forth. And people have sent in their ideas of how they can apply open data to build tools, analysis and applications and so forth around each of those themes. So we've had 36 different applications and they're spread across the five themes from flooding to transport to biodiversity, nature-based solutions, etc.
Cool. And so we should stay tuned for that or what's the,
Absolutely. So the process is at present, we're doing the shortlisting of those 36. We'll probably whittle that down to around 7 or 8 that will actually take part in the challenge itself. Then there'll be a couple of months and then we'll do an evaluation at the end and then there'll be a showcase and also awards for the top 3. So we ran this last year and the top 3, do I have a moment to tell you about the top 3 from last year or?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Brilliant. Yeah. So we ran this on Active Travel last year and the top 3, well, the top one was, it was called My 15 Minute City or Where's the Crack? And basically it's just an interactive map that you drop a pin on and then it will show you all the things you can see or do within a 5, a 10 or a 15 minute walk or cycle from that point. So it uses these things called isochrones. It's an isochrone map. And depending on the street layouts and so forth, it shows you how far you can get in a time. And then using all the open data sets, it will tell you all the things, all the museums you can go to, the parks, the gyms, et cetera, within that amount of space. And that was particularly important in times, I suppose, of COVID when people had their mobility restricted and were looking for things to do that were close at hand. We had a couple more prize winners. The second one was called Active Travel to School. And that was more, I suppose, rather than being aimed at the public, it was more aimed at city planners and so forth. And that was really showing them all the neighborhoods where people didn't actively travel to school. It also showed where the local schools were. And then if you zoom in, you could see why people weren't actively traveling to school. So very often they might be based in estates, housing estates, which only had one entrance in and one entrance out. And it was very car oriented. But the planners were able to see that if they put in a little pedestrian entrance here, they put in a little crossing there, well, then they can change that 2 kilometer drive to school into a 500 meter walk potentially. So that gave great insights to the local authority planning teams. And then finally, the third prize winner was a site called DublinBikeParking.com. Now, this was already in existence. It showed lots of places where you can park your bike around Dublin. But through the challenge, they managed to update it with new data so that it was improved in terms of where you can park. But then they also put on the bike share company data. So you can look for real-time bike share availability in your neighborhood or at your place of work or wherever you are for the three bike share companies. Instead of going to each app individually, they'll all be there on the one map.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. All very useful applications and yeah, exciting things happening. So Gay, maybe you can, I don't know if you have kind of a passion project or something that you really would like to talk about with us today.
Yeah, well, just in preparation for this chat, we would have had a look at what data sets were being consumed that we were publishing. And I suppose we're pretty proud of the fact that we've done a lot of work in terms of our sports and recreational based data sets, of which there'll be many in terms of football pitches, playing pitches, swimming pools, and then all the indoor facilities, various indoor halls and all their usages. So there's a hell of a lot of data there. And it's possibly one of our top one or two in terms of public interest in it. And then arising from that, there's a couple of fairly sizable projects going on. Luke may talk about one in particular later. So there's a project called Hale and Hearty, and it's being championed by one of our fellow local authorities here in Dublin, which is Fingal County Council, in conjunction with that company that Luke mentioned earlier, Dairy Links. And again, it's an app and it's a web site and it's a database, and it's allowing the public to basically see what recreational facilities are there, and it's allowing them to search on recreational type and distance from their home, et cetera, et cetera, and to make decisions about what they can do near their homes. And there's a very similar development going on with Sport Ireland, just coincidentally, and they are also using the same type of data, no surprise, because it's sport related. So be pretty proud of the fact that that those particular data sets are being harvested and used and being deployed to the public as such.
Exciting stuff. So I guess, Gay, also you talk about a lot of these benefits of, you know, open data initiatives like the ones you just spoke about. But I guess also my mind goes to, what do you think are could be some negative consequences that we need to account for or that we really have to watch out for?
I suppose we mentioned the our concerns with general data protection earlier, so that's kind of covered. But the main concern I would have would be data validity and keeping data up to date, because there's no point in somebody using one of these apps and deciding they'd like to go and play a game of badminton in a certain hall that's beside them, to arrive to find that hall closed, that it doesn't open till 3 p.m., that the data was captured maybe a year or two ago, and it's not up to date. And that's a real challenge, because to keep data up to date, it requires, it's a resource issue. There's no denying that it is. So there's an onus on us, if we're going to publish data as open that we try our best to keep it as current as it possibly can be. And in an ideal world, all these things are captured in real time, like the, you know, like the bus or the train that's coming down, literally down the tracks to you. But it's not always the case. And I'd be conscious of that fact.
Yeah. Luke, do you have any tips for that? How do you keep data up to date?
Yeah, so working with our technical partners, we've developed a quality assurance validator, which I suppose helps with that. So we that will do things like we'll put in an update frequency, and if the update frequency, for example, is yearly, it will tell you if you haven't updated it within the year. It'll tell you if there's any broken links, and it'll tell you various other attributes or features about the quality of the data set. However, the real challenge, I suppose, as Gay outlined there, is the resources. It's a resourcing issue. It's finding the right people. It's getting the data from them. And sometimes the data itself, it might have been collected as, for example, a one-off survey or something like that. So then, you know, the whole data collection process might need to be re-engineered or restarted in order to get that update. So it is a challenge. It will be a challenge going forward. However, we also have obligations to do this, so it's important that we get it right.
Yeah, I think we also find the same challenge because we crowdsource a lot of our database, which Smart Dublin has contributed to quite a bit of our use case database on our platform. And I think it's also a challenge because we always have to make sure it's up to date. We want to make sure that, you know, obviously if it's a project, it's ongoing and you've learned new things. So we always want to make sure to add that as well. So we feel that pain also here at Babel. So and then I would just ask you, I guess, Luke, do you have anything that we didn't touch on yet that you would really like to speak about? Can open the floor to you if you'd like.
Yeah. Well, sure. I suppose you spoke before about what's the impetus at the moment. Why is there more talk around open data? And I think part of it is the recasting of the Open Data Directive, which last year was transcribed into Irish law. And so there was a bit of noise around there. We organized a webinar, an internal webinar, for the implications of this for local government, and really what the directive and also the national strategy say is that data that is information that we hold as public bodies should be open by default, and it should be open by design. Yeah. So that means instead of thinking about why should we publish this, we should more be thinking about why shouldn't we publish it. And as Gay said, that there might be many valid reasons. For example, you know, it might be personal data, or there might be commercial considerations, or whatever it is. But the important thing is we need to work hard to change that culture whereby people are thinking, why should I publish this? Why should I open up? And are feeling perhaps concerned or reticent about doing so, to change that mindset, really, to think, okay, by default, I should be publishing, and maybe think about, unless there's good reasons not to, and what can those reasons be?
Yeah, good point. Gay, same to you. Would you like to speak about something that we haven't spoken about already?
The point Luke made is really valid. There is the open by default and by design. And I suppose I had a think about that and wondering how could we improve on that. And, you know, we have very, very good procurement people in all of our organizations, and it might be as simple as a quick phone call and a chat, and explain it to them that, you know, in an ideal world, if they could include in our procurement template documents some wording to cover off that, because as you can imagine, when a department needs a new computer system, they typically need it yesterday, and when we go out to procurement, it's done very as rapidly as possible. So it will be, you know, an idea to just get the communication going internally to have that type of thing covered off in our procurement, so that a system would never arrive into a local authority that didn't have those capabilities inbuilt. And there's no great overhead there, as you know, in terms of what would additional onus that would put on a third-party development company. And I suppose the other thing I probably referred to it earlier would be to just to continue to try and continue to educate our own staff internally to the benefits of it, because without that, operational matters will always take precedence in local authorities, because we're generally under-resourced and there's a lot of demands on local authorities. And, you know, to be fair, open data wouldn't be in the top three. And in fact, it wouldn't be in the top five of a demand on any member of our staff here. So if we can demonstrate the benefits to them, and some of them are indirect in terms of, as we said, in terms of, you know, apps being developed or, you know, research being carried out. But some of the benefits would be direct in terms of we have freedom of information legislation in Ireland, like I believe was probably, you know, Europe-wide as well, so that members of the public can write in and request information. And there's a fair overhead of resource required internally here to answer those type of questions, if you can imagine. But if data is published as open or otherwise, the requester can simply be referred to that data set as opposed to having to put through the full formal response. So we've examples of that here where data is being published as open data, and it's greatly reduced the freedom of information burden on our departments here. So that's a real benefit that's easy to sell internally.
Yeah, good advice also to those listening. And so with that, I will move on to our segment, and this is a segment called Shout Out. Shout Out. Mention a person, an organization, or a city you think deserves more recognition in the field. Can either one of you think of someone to shout out?
I could certainly think of somebody who's an old colleague of mine. His name is, and we're no relation, just in case you think we are, his surname. His name is Dominic Bourne, and Dominic works in a neighbouring local authority in Dublin, Fingal. I mentioned him earlier. And Dominic would have a long-standing interest in open data. I think Fingal may have been the first local authority in the country to publish open data. Luke might contradict me, but I think I'm probably right on that. And Dominic would have been a driving force in that. And I mentioned the Hale and Hartley project there earlier. So Dominic will get my shout out.
Perfect. Luke?
Hi, Tamlin. Yes. So, as I mentioned, we have this working group, which is the four Dublin local authorities, which Dominic Byrne is part of, who Gabriel just referenced there. And I suppose all the open data liaison officers as well are part of a working group, which was set up by the National Open Data Initiative. And I think that provides a good amount of structure for our work. So everything that we publish here at the region is harvested up to the National Open Data Portal, and everything that they publish there is harvested by the European Open Data Portal. So in theory, you can compare planning applications or bike parking or whatever it is in one city in Europe with another, just go into the European Open Data Portal and seeing all the information there. So I think I would give a shout out to the National Open Data Unit, because Ireland is ranked second in Europe for open data maturity. And a good reason for that, a good part of that is to do with the National Open Data Strategy, the National Open Data Portal, and a bit of the shape and structure that they give to the rest of us working in open data. So I'll give my shout out to them if I have to give a shout out to somebody for the work they do. And we do work quite closely with them too.
Okay. Yeah, good. Who's number one, out of curiosity?
Now bear with me for a moment. I'll just have to ask my friend Google.
Google knows.
Yeah. So we were number one for a few years, and then we dropped back a couple of places in 2020 to maybe a third or fourth, and now we're back up to second. But I'll just have to double check who's first.
No worries. So we now move on also to a little recurring question. And that's what we ask every single guest. And it's quite interesting to hear everyone's different perspectives on it. And the question is, what is a smart city? Gay, do you want to go first while Luke does a little bit of Googling?
I might need to do a bit of Googling on this particular question. I suppose it's a city where the citizens are used to encouraged to use technology to do things better or smarter. There's all types of examples of possibilities there. I've sat in on many seminars and seen plenty of examples. And I guess over the next few years, the technology will be just permeates. It'll be almost, we probably won't even recognize that it's happening, you know. So simple example, I suppose, would be we've got these big belly bins now that, that there's a chip there that sends a message for when the bin becomes full that it's collected, so we don't have problems with overflowing bins or seagulls and all of that. So, but there's so many different technologies there that are there that we probably don't even notice on our streetscape now, you know.
Yeah, good. Luke, did you find us the answer of who's number one?
Oh my God, I'm looking at tables here, numbers, and I'm saying, just tell me who's come first. No, I'm not there. Bear with
That's
me.
Okay. That's okay. We can go back.
I can take your question about smart cities, if you like, now.
Yes. Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. So yeah, absolutely. As I was mentioning, we're very much concerned with data and open data, and we do see open data and data more generally being at the heart of smart cities and at the heart really of dealing with the challenges that the cities face. So we saw this through COVID, for example, that the open data around COVID, around where what the R number was, where the outbreaks were, et cetera, how big should we make the restrictions or how small, was all based on the data and the analysis of epidemiologists. So when we look at our smart city problems and the challenge they face, challenges they address, be it getting around the city in a sustainable way, climate action, dealing with waste, as Gay mentioned there, we see a huge data component, and it's about using that data to make well-informed decisions take the long view into consideration. So absolutely, I would put data at the heart of my definition of what smart cities are about. And in fact, I would extend it to talk about smart and sustainable cities.
Yeah, absolutely. I think data is such a key player in any kind of smart city. Knowing when to use the data and how to apply it is, I think you can't have a smart city without it. So, and I think open data is becoming more and more of a hot topic. So I'm excited to see in the future also what Dublin is doing. And so with that, I will thank you both for the incredible insights into what you both do. It's really interesting work. And to all of our listeners, don't forget you can always create a free account on babel-smartcities.eu to find out more about smart city projects, solutions, implementations, and more. So thank you all. Thank you all for listening. I'll see you at the next stop on the journey to a better urban life. Yeah, winging it here though, Luke. So will we have the answer to who is number one?
I think it's France.
France. France. Give me a dig out there.